From our Chicago area studios, this is Behind the Destruction, your Demolition Derby podcast. And now for your hosts, Chris Neumer and Steve Gursky Jr. Welcome to Behind the Destruction.
Episode number 2 of Behind the Destruction for the week of December 4th, 2011. I'm Chris Neumer. With me in the chair over there, Steve Gursky Jr.
Howdy.
Our guests today are Stranglehold managers Michael Noble and Mel Noble Jr. This episode of the podcast is sponsored by Heavy Metal Performance. Located in Rockdale, Illinois, HMP specializes in high-performance diesel engines. Whether you want routine maintenance or repairs, or you want to go all out and add a custom lift kit to your truck, HMP is up for the occasion. Call 866-467-7971 for more information, or visit heavymetalperformance.com. Steve, how you been?
Not too bad. Yourself?
I have been good. I have been pondering something, and I'm curious to hear your opinion on this.
Oh no. Here we go.
As a man who has driven long miles, I recently took a long car ride down south. I'm talking 7 hours south. And I realized halfway there that I had a fly in the car that I had picked up from Chicago as I was driving south. And I was wondering, do you think it freaks a fly out to get in a car and then, like, and I shushed it out like 5 hours south of here when I got gas, but, like, do you think that freaks the fly out at all? Like, it's, you know, 45 and cold and sunny up here, and then we get down somewhere and the next thing he's feeling is like 72 and sort of sunny?
I don't think it freaks him out. And frankly, I don't know.
Nor care.
The fly probably doesn't know what's going on. I got flies that sometimes will end up in the house all winter, and when it gets warm, they're alive, and that's creepier than creepy. So,
yep. No, I don't know. I think the thing that fascinated me the most about this was the fact that I was trying to figure out if there was like a human equivalent to this, like where you just go in something, you're like, oh, I'm just going to walk over here, and then you leave the thing, like you walk into your apartment, you walk out of your apartment, and all of a sudden you're in Colorado, and you're like, what the hell am I doing here?
That's some good drugs, man.
That is some good drugs. Ah. So, in our first podcast, we spoke to Orange Crush runner
extraordinaire
Ryan Bluer, and you know, we got to a lot of the topics we wanted to, but interestingly, the one that fascinated me, I'd say the most, we didn't actually get to for time reasons, and this is something that I can talk about with you because it involves you. In the fourth night of 2010, I think you remember this. Bluer was driving down the back straightaway. And, well, you describe what happened at that. What happened?
It was one of them races, you know, another hard-fought battle between Team Reckoning and Orange Crush. And, you know, at that point in the race, you know, it's still anyone's race. And Ryan Bluer's coming out of turn two, lined him up for a shot, timed him, got him, popped him pretty good. And
you know, caught air in this, right?
Yep, I think, yeah, we both kind of caught air. You know, popped him off the wall. He kept going, and you know, both our cars are still running. I was later quoted as joking, I think I knocked his foot off the gas pedal.
You may have done that.
Maybe not so much joking. There may have been a curse in there, something like that.
Things like that.
And then, you know, obviously a frustrated driver as
oh, you
myself
were pissed
at that time. I went out and I blew the cheating whistle, which not proud of.
I believe you said something like, I caught air and that bastard, I barely knocked his foot off the accelerator. Does that sound like a direct quote?
Bastard might be a little strong.
I think it's actually a little weak. I think I was going conservative.
Yeah, I think there was an a-hole in there.
Yep, but that sounds about right. And so that was the case. And I believe that was the case for about a year, wasn't it? That was the opinion of that particular hit on that particular driver?
Well, right at that moment, I was convinced, yeah, there was something going on. You go throughout the off season, you know, it cools down, kind of goes away. And then
not really.
I mean, it's not as intense, okay?
Yes, that is true.
But what ends up coming down to is I actually was put in the same exact situation this last year, facing Team Stranglehold. And, you know, he was racing a Mark, you know, Ryan Bluer the year before was racing a Mark IV Lincoln, you know, so let's say 73, 74. And this year I was racing a 73 T-Bird, which is basically the same thing, same structure. And I took the same shot. In fact, I think the guy that hit me might have been going a little faster than I was when I hit Bluer, and hit me in the same spot, and didn't really take that much damage. And then
did he even knock your foot off your accelerator?
No, actually he didn't. So, you know, I guess my foot's heavier. I don't know. But, you know, it's one of them things where makes you feel like an ass, I tell you that, because it's, you know, you find out, hey, you're running pretty much about the same kind of car and come up with the same results, and it makes you feel like a total a-hole. I do believe prior to the interview,
we definitely discussed this.
And expressed my feelings, and I don't know if I apologize, though.
I think the intent was clear, even if the words were not.
Yes. Ego. That ego thing.
The pride, yes.
The demo pride, yes.
But I found this scenario to be really not only unique but telling, because so much of the demo world is based upon this should never be. This should never be. This car should not crumple this way. This A-pillar should not do that. This door should never do that. And it's always that there's cheating involved.
Right, yes. You know, oh, no, that car wasn't, you know, built to the rules. This car was not. No, it was, hey, that car did that, and wow, he's cheating.
Yep, he's got to be cheating. There's no way. And then you put yourself in almost the exact same situation. I mean, as close to sort of a redo as you can get. And it's like, well, shit, maybe I was wrong.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty much what it was. And, you know, to actually be on that side, you know, it makes you feel like an ass.
Yeah. 100%,
you know, and obviously.
And you didn't even go to Facebook with this. It was just sort of complaining to teammates and people around you. And, you know, I when you mentioned a Bluer, I think I even might have mentioned it to him earlier that it was sort of, you know, he seemed somewhat surprised. Like, really, that? Huh, no. Because the car, helping nothing, was he continued to proclaim how rusty the car was, because it was a terribly rusty car.
Yeah, the car was rusty, and, you know, and the car, actually, I was racing against Ryan Bluer in the night in question, was a very nice car, very clean car, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, his car, probably, you know, outweighed it. I think it was in a 71 Merc, you know. They're kind of a lighter car, but, you know, it's, you know, to say, yeah, you didn't stop me and my car was rusty. It was kind of like, you know, a little fuel on the fire, I guess.
Twisting the knife a little bit more.
Yeah, yeah, just a little bit.
So now you were racing against Stranglehold third night, was it?
Correct, third night. Yeah.
Because I know round. I had mentioned, I had even broached the subject of doing the podcast in the off season with you, and you said, yeah, that sounds good. You know, who would we talk to? And I said, hey, we can even get Ryan Bluer on the show. And it's even here in my notebook. We were going to create a section called Gursky Jr. Gets to Interview Ryan Bluer and Ask Him About Fourth Night in 2010. When he cowl shotted him in the back straightaway and Bluer's car wasn't damaged at all. And we thought that was going to be a great section until then you experienced third night and we're like, well, we might have to tweak that section.
Yeah, maybe, maybe there wasn't a cheating thing there. Not maybe. Obviously, there wasn't. And you know, it just shows how, you know, I mean, how you can be wrong, you know, and I guess I can say it and that's okay.
I don't know. This turnabout. And again, as I said, it's not like you were broadcasting it anywhere. I found it to be a really interesting, unique situation. And I thought to myself, what does it take to start? Like, you know, here you are firsthand. You've had this experience now, you know, of course you would have to continue racing for this, but I'm sure there might've been another suspicious hit that you took. And in with this under your belt, you might go, you know, my first thought was to think he was cheating. Maybe now it's just like, maybe it's one of those things. I think I'm actually at the point in time after you told me this that I don't think anyone ever is cheating ever now. I think that's where I'm at.
You know, I think people do to, you know, a point. You're going to have people that maybe go stretch it, gray area, whatever you want to call it. I mean, cheating is, that's a harsh word, I guess, but you know, I can say that, you know, if you build to the rule book, that's all well and fine. But I think there's a lot of misconception in, hey, I think, you know, I heard this team's cheating, so we're going to do this now.
Yeah.
You know, and instead of just going over and checking it out and just kind of nipping it right there.
Well,
then, you know,
nobody ever talks to anybody. But let me ask you this. Like, what constitutes cheating? Like, you know, if you do something like for example, the head of officiating last year, Dave Housechild, said that, you know, Orange Crush was cheating by twisting their bumper pistons and welding them into place.
Yeah, I think it was something like they were boxing off the end of their frame.
Yeah.
And, you know, as a head official, that's his job to say whether that's elite or illegal or not.
But
it's not in the rule book that says specifically, you know.
But the issue with that is my question to you is this, and this is sort of unique to that particular situation. He said that was cheating. However, he didn't do anything about it. And when you took a look at it, when you and Brian Anderson, your teammate, took a look at what Orange Crush was doing, you both said, hey, that's not actually cheating. We don't think that's cheating.
Well, you know, what it was one thing was said that it was done a certain way, and Brian Anderson checked it out, and it was actually not done that way. So it's like a credibility thing, I guess, is how Brian Anderson said it, you know. So, you know, in that thing, but, you know, how the old TDA owners and old official was, the old official.
Is this the Gabriels? Or?
Yeah, the Gabriels, you know. But the Gabriels, they kind of tied Dave's hands, you know, Dave Hochschild's hands sometimes, and where if he thought something was wrong, he always had to go and try to clear it through them, and that's where the problem was. Well,
yeah.
Just, you know, hey, whatever, the show must go on. So, you know.
My question to you, though, is what does would or would not constitute cheating? Like, okay, a loaded bumper, is that cheating?
Correct, yeah.
What about putting a 70s round bumper on an 80s round car?
Yep, that'd be cheating.
Okay. Like, what is something that's is there a category of things that's illegal but not cheating?
Well, I mean, I don't know. I guess to me, it's if it's in the rule book as illegal and you do it, that's you're cheating. That's an advantage because those are advantages that could putting a, you know, putting a 70s round bumper from a 73 Merc on the front of your Grand Marquis in the 80s round, is that make the car stronger? Who knows? Maybe, maybe not, but it's illegal.
Mm-hmm.
And it's illegal because it could be an advantage. And if it's an advantage, it's considered cheating. So, I mean, it's kind of like a pyramid of crap you got to go.
What about something
through.
Like if you had a distributor protector plate that was 8 by 11? Now, the rules say 8 by 10. Now, is 8 by 11, is that cheating simply because it doesn't go by the rules? Or is that sort of like, well, you know, that's that gray area again?
Yeah, I think that's kind of a gray area. I mean, it's illegal because, you know, if you follow the rules to a direct T like they should be, it's 8 by 10, so that should be fixed. But is that cheating? That's, I don't know, that's rough to say. I tie in cheating with an advantage.
Yeah.
You know, if there's an advantage, you know, that's cheating. If it's just plain old illegal, just because it's in the rule book, it says you can't do it, then that's illegal.
Yeah. See, that's what I was getting at, which was it seems like there is actually a weird sort of gray area there because it's like, yeah, if you're strengthening your frame, okay, that's cheating.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're just doing some little stuff, like I'm sure there are people out there who don't like – now, granted, I am a layperson, but to save my life, I could not tell you the difference between a 70s bumper and an 80s bumper. And I know people will tell me, oh, that's not true. But really, no, I couldn't do it. And it's like I'm sure there's a mistake. And it's like it's not done maliciously, but – there it is. So
yeah, I don't know that whole thing. I mean, I can honestly tell you that I don't know what every bumper looks like. I mean, that's crazy. I mean, if you can, you need to find a new hobby.
Oh, my God. No, there are people out there who not only know the difference between 70s and 80s round bumpers, but the people who can tell me, oh, that came off a 73 Lincoln or that came off a 74 Mark IV.
I mean, some of them are obvious, right? Yeah. There's some obvious ones where you look at it, you're like, well, yeah, hey, this. But, I mean, there's some of them like, you know, hey, that came off a 72 Eldorado or something like that. And you're like, how do you know this? I mean, did you have one in high school? No, I just know this.
Yeah.
Wow. You know,
it never ceases to amaze me. Yeah. So next time somebody is out there and takes a good hit or takes a licking and wonders what that car is doing, I encourage them to not say instantly play the cheating card, which is sort of like the demo derby's version of the race card, I would say.
Right. You know, it's I'll tell you what, it's embarrassing.
Yeah.
It's, you know, you do it.
As a person who has actually done it himself.
Yep.
So I don't think I will ever, unless I have like official proof that somebody has done something like, you know, shoved railroad tracks into their frame, or
maybe,
you know,
like welded seams on the frames, or
well, even that. Little things. I'm not coming out and saying anything until I have proof. There's no speculation. I refuse to play the cheating card. And I really do think that's what it's like. It's very akin to the race card. It's like, it's something you can play. It's very easy to throw out, to deflect blame. And it's sort of like, no, I don't like it.
It's a big thing. I think it's a motorsports thing. Yeah. Big time. You know, I mean, you don't see, you know, the Bears losing to the Packers and then coming out and saying they're cheaters.
Yeah, that's true. You don't.
You know, so I mean, it's a motorsport thing because there's set rules and guidelines, and there's always a way, a kind of a way around it, or a way to tweak them or engineer them to your benefit. You know, so some people just can't handle, like, hey, you lost, deal with it type of thing. You know, so instantly, hey, you can't be better than me, you're cheating.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, I think there's creativity that goes along with the gray areas too. You know, there was a guy, he was a early NASCAR pit chief. He did a lot of the designs for things, and when they limited how much gas they allowed in the gas tank, what he did was he created a fuel line that was like 20 feet long and like six inches wide or something crazy like that, and he could get in an extra, you know, 8 to 10 gallons worth of gasoline in the hose. And people were like, oh, that's cheating, and it wasn't against the rule. Now, to me, I look at that and I think that's wonderfully creative.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's a way to give yourself an advantage, and technically, yeah.
And that is exactly the term you used for cheating.
Right, yeah.
But
technically, it's cheating. But, you know, that's where the sanctioning body that you race for, no matter what it is, has to step up.
Yeah,
you can't have a 5-page rule book and just expect people to, you know, not read between the lines and just say, you know better, you know.
Yeah. But or no, try.
Hey, this is the rule book, and, you know, people spend a lot of time, energy, and money to do this, and any little advantage you can come up with.
Oh, sure.
You know, that's not, you know, obviously, I'm not going to sit and weld a frame, but, I mean, any little advantage, whether it's a tire change or, you know, hey, check this out, I made a rim with steel paddles, because there's no tire rule, says I can't do it, you know, but, you know.
No. That was, just by way of closing, I'll say this, that like one of the things that surprised me the most when I talked to Teresa Gabriel last year was how utterly annoyed and upset she was at the way the drivers continually tried to find loopholes and gray areas in the, well, I guess, guidelines. And she's like, don't they understand what we're getting at? And I was like, don't you understand what they're trying to do?
No.
So
every advantage you can get.
Every advantage. I mean, because why not? So... All right, well, we are going to bring our guests on right after this, and we will be right back.
Well, look, he's wearing his helmet.
This podcast is sponsored by Heavy Metal Performance, a family-owned and operated business located in Rockdale, Illinois. Much to the chagrin of their doctors, the guys at HMP live, eat, and breathe diesel. In the amount of time it takes you to listen to this episode of Behind the Destruction, HMP can add up to 124 horsepower to your truck. Nothing says Merry Christmas, honey, like more horsepower. For more information, call 866-467-7971 or visit HeavyMetalPerformance.com.
Welcome back. We're here with our guests, Stranglehold co-managers Michael Noble and Mel Noble Jr. We're going to be bringing out the Nobles one at a time. We are going to start out talking to Michael Noble. How long has it been going on that you guys have been managing the team?
This will be our first year managing it. Still going to have the same owners as Mel and Wayne, but we're going to manage it ourselves this year as far as driver duties, car builds, getting our car to the track. They're taking care of kind of the money end of it, and we got the rest.
Hmm. Now, this is your rookie year this last year, Michael. How did it match expectations for you coming in?
I honestly wasn't exactly sure what to think. I wanted more, obviously. If I was on the track, I wanted a championship, and that didn't happen. Next thing would be I wanted to race one. That didn't happen, so I guess it was, I was disappointed in it, to be honest.
Now, you know, the one thing that I often hear about in respect to the NFL is when rookies come in, they always say how much faster it is than they were expecting or faster than college. When you first entered the TDA this last year, was it pretty much what you were expecting, or was it faster?
Like, I've been watching these for a long time, 11 years or something like that now, and I feel I have a really good understanding of what's happening on the track. And I didn't realize when you're out there that all you get is like a snapshot. You know, you got to focus on getting your car around the track and doing your job. And when you look around, it's like you're looking at a snapshot of what's happening, and you're kind of assuming on what's going to happen from that point on. Well, he's going over here, so he's going to be running laps, or, you know, he's going to come pick this guy up. But once you get out there on the track, doesn't always go the way you think it's going to go when you look at that snapshot. Next thing you know, you're adjusting. You don't have time to watch the race and watch what everybody's doing out there. But when you do have time to look around and figure out exactly what's going on in the race, all you see is what's happening at that moment. You don't see what's happening 10 seconds after that moment. You're assuming what's going to happen, but that doesn't always happen.
Racing was, you know, this style of racing has been in the family for a long time. And, yeah, you know, you watch it and everything goes. And, you know, when you get on the track, for me, it was, wow, this track is a lot smaller than I thought it was going to be. You know, my first race ever, I actually took the checkered flag and we raced the team. It was actually Damage Inc. and it wasn't a very good team. So that's a perfect race to go out there and try
that
it out.
That is the complete lack of gasps after that statement.
Right. You know, it was, track seemed smaller. It actually seemed like you're going a little slower than you thought you would. I mean, granted, that could have been me in my first race. But I did some ice racing previously, and I was actually shocked by how easy it was to control the car on mud. But I do know what you mean by, you know, snapshots, you know, because everything's happening so fast that your brain's only, like, computing part of it. It's processing it and crapping it out. And then, you know, like a lot of people say, hey, that was a good thing you did here, and you don't even remember. You're like, yeah, okay, you know, you don't remember it. But, you know, the more you race, it'll slow down for you, and things will become a lot easier, too, especially when you get on a team where you trust everyone and you don't have to worry about what's going on. You know, you can take the, you know, they call it like a half a track at the time. You know, when you're on a back stretch, you can see the front stretch. You know, that's the other half of the track, you know, and you only worry about your half that you're on.
Now, you had said that, you know, you weren't super happy with your first year in the league, and I had talked to you, and you're definitely excited about coming back in 2012. And attempting to do a little bit better. Now, there were a couple of, you guys had an absolutely fantastic third night this year. I mean, it was like, it seemed like out of nowhere, because you only won two races on the season. They were both in the same night. And not only that, they were against really top tier teams. Do you have any idea or plan on how you can get like the consistency of a third night all season?
It starts in the shop, and, We need to build together, and we need to not be fighting with each other before we get to the track. Everybody needs to be on the same page.
Were you doing that this year? Was there a lot of fighting? And
yeah, we had issues in the garage in Reddick. We had issues with our teammates up north. I mean, nothing like we wanted to punch each other in the face or anything. Hard tongues.
Mm-hmm.
And but it's not like we want to punch each other in the face, but just strategy discussion. And, you know, we were trying to make it all fit, and sometimes, you know, all the pieces don't fit there. You know, driver responsibility was an issue down in Reddick.
What do you mean by driver responsibility?
You know, at race day, you got to be there to race. You got to have your, you got to show up in the morning ready to rock. You got a job to do. You got to get all your cars to the track. You got a lot to do on race day. After race day, your job is to get your cars out of there. And you know, we had some issues with that.
Compared to some of the other race issues that we've been hearing about, those don't seem like that large.
It's pretty frustrating. I mean, you take a tough loss, and Steve, I know you know, tough losses, they're not fun. And you know, honestly, just for me, I want to get my stuff and get out of there. And it's our job to get going, get our stuff going. You know, you don't want to be there all night, but you know, you get other people who are in the stands and kind of playing a superstar role. That's hey, get back here. We got a job to do.
You know? Yeah, it's funny you mentioned, you know, I mean, you know, obviously tough losses, that sticks with you a lot more. But, I mean, you're talking to a guy that raced on a team that lived, that we pretty much organized, what, 3 miles from the track, and we were still the last team out of there every
night?
Two miles, mile and a half from the track?
As the crow flies, this thing has to be like 6 blocks from the track.
Right. So, I mean, we were, you know, we're one of them teams that after a race, whether we won the night or, you know, lost in the third round, I mean, sometimes we'd lose in the second round, I guess, but it was, you know, we were, I wouldn't say broken heart, we were upset, but we'd patch it up, and then we'd kind of check our damage, do this, BS, and next thing you know, hey, we better get cars on because they're turning the lights off, you know.
Yeah, I'd say that's actually one of the great mysteries surrounding the Team Reckoning, which is the shop where you towed all the cars to is 6 blocks from the track, and you guys are always the last team out. I don't know how you do it.
Yeah, I mean, for me, the equipment that I hauled with a two-car trailer, and where we got in, if I had to be the last one there because I would block up everything, yeah. So... you know, some nights when I actually did want to get out of there and everyone else is jaw-jacking, yeah, that'd get a little frustrating. But out of everything that you can nitpick on a team, if you guys are having problems with loading cars and stuff, I say you guys are sitting pretty damn good.
No, I mean, it starts farther than that, but I mean, I'm not getting into it or throwing anybody under a bus. But, I mean, as far as that goes, yeah, you guys are right here, but Mr. B's isn't too far away either. So
right.
We had that working for us, too. You know, there was a lot of trying to get cohesive as a team, trying to get on the same page, what strategies we want to employ on the racetrack. And, I mean, we were having discussions, changing stuff up until on the line, getting in our cars. And, you know, you should know what's going to, you know, yeah, you're pointing out who's in what cars and watch out for this, watch out for that. But once you know who you're racing, and even before you know who you're racing, you should have a pretty good idea who's doing what out there.
And you didn't always have that?
We're changing it up on the line. We never raced with each other. I mean, honestly, by the time you got me, Wally, Nick, Junior and Bill McMahon out there. I mean, how often did you have the same guys ever race with each other? I didn't get on the team until the second race. Wally wasn't racing with us until the third race. So you're trying to get everybody together and on the same page, and it wasn't there. You need that cohesiveness.
Yeah,
I mean, to be a champion.
You guys, I think you guys had what, 7 listed drivers, seven or eight.
Ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean, we had the conversation with Bluer in another interview. They had 6, you know, and trying to get everyone on the same page, you know. Regardless of talent, you know, just getting to know the guys. You look at the teams that do well, they have 4 drivers and a backup driver, you know, where them 4 guys, they race together. Unless, you know, you get a couple of races where, you know, the guy's not performing, then you replace them, you know. But you need that to be cohesive and you know, I mean, with you guys, with having multiple drivers switching in and out, it's hard to get that groove, you know?
It's very hard, and I think this year we're going to a direction where we got 4 guys that are racing. There's no questions in the garage who's racing what. There's 4 guys that are going to race, and we're going to have a backup driver, and it's going to, you know, and everybody's going to be on the same page or they're not going to be with us. I mean, it's bottom line how it's going to be this year. It's no BS. I mean, We're going to win, and I know, you know, we're underdogs no matter what, and we have a bunch of youth on the team, obviously, but we're not out there to go out for a stronger.
That sounds good.
We show up with cars that we feel are ready to win the night and win a championship, and that's why we're showing up out there. I mean, we're not going out there to waste our time. We want to win as bad as anybody.
Do you guys think that, you know, you see a bunch of young guys, do you think the inexperience will hurt you or help you?
You know, obviously, experience is a good thing.
But you're not burned out, though. I mean, like, you get some of them guys have been doing this for 20 years.
Oh, yeah. But, you know, at the same time, too, a lot of us can work with each other in different ideas and stuff. You don't have the people who are set in their ways so much. I mean, yeah, we discussed with Wayne and my dad, and, you know, we got to bounce ideas off of them, too, because, I mean, they're a valuable resource for us to have. I mean, they're down helping, too. We do the majority of all our building, but they're helping a lot, and they're very good to bounce ideas off because the experience is there in the garage then, you know what I mean? Even if we're young on the track, we got, you know, 20 years of experience between those guys to fall back on also. So it helps. I mean, on the track, obviously, honestly, I think you had all the experience in the world with us this year in Wally. I mean, Santa Fe, legend. But
well, and it timed up nicely that, you know, when he showed up, you guys suddenly started winning and went to the finals.
Yeah, no, and you know, we talked about it, and a lot of pieces fell right for us. I mean, but you had him on the track, and he was studying, and as far as strategy and everything, you know, we trusted him when he talked because he had all the experience. You know, he has the experience. But I don't know. It's I just want to start fresh with the team and get it, you know. We're going to do it our way, not just mine and Junior's way, but on our team as our 4 drivers. we're going to do it our way all year.
Okay. Well, let me ask you this, because I often compare, like, talking to people who aren't familiar with the demos out here, I often try to compare it to other team sports that people are familiar with. And I always think of football when talking about the TDA. And I wonder, you know, you're here and you're in a position and you're basically talking about doing something that's kind of akin to rebuilding. And, yeah, you know, there are teams in the NFL, it's like they go 1-15 one year, they get the top pick, and then suddenly the next year they're 9-7. Like, that's a huge turnaround. You know, they make the playoffs and everyone's like, wow, you don't see that. And as opposed to like baseball, where it takes you 5 years to rebuild, do you think it's something that, you know, knowing the sport as you do, you know, as being in your family for so many years and watching it, that it's something where you really can come out next year and challenge for the championship?
Honestly, I do. We're still looking for a fourth guy, honestly, and you'd like a guy with experience. You know, you would like it. You won't like a guy set in his ways and, hey, this is it, this is it. But, I mean, a guy who's performing on the track, and not exactly a guy who's been performing for the past 20 years, but in the past year or two, somebody who can perform. And you'd like to go out and get the big name. You'd like to go say, hey, Bluer, come race for the white team. You know what I mean? You go out and find a guy like Decker or Johnny and Pete or whatever. You know, the guys who are out there who you know who they are, go, hey, Art, want to come out of retirement and race for the white team? You'd like to plug in a guy who's been there, but it doesn't just work that way. A lot of it, you got to build from within.
Is there a quality or a known quantity that you're looking for in the fourth driver, like somebody who builds strong, or are you looking for a crusher? Are you looking for somebody who can keep his helmet on the entire race?
The helmet on is an issue on our team, and we're working very hard to correct that issue. Honestly, when we were looking, I talked to my brother, and he's really good at tape. You know, he's always watching tape. Who does what out there? He knows more about racing than anybody.
This is Mel?
Yeah. Okay. Mel knows more about racing than knows it all. And I was like, hey, watch the tapes. Tell me whose cars are running at the end of the race. You know, not exactly who's always fast, but whose cars are there at the end of the race? Because when you're in a knockdown dragout, you need the guy who builds a car that's going to last the end of the race. When you got your car over there, Steve, dieseling around the track, you know, puffing out smoke, and the war of attrition we had during the year is what it kind of felt like to me, because you had my car limping around out there. But, I mean, you guys won the race because your car kept running, no matter how beaten battered it was. And, we were in the race, honestly, because my car was still going, even though it had looked like it got hit a telephone pole in a DUI accident. But
I'm curious now. So who are these drivers that kept running?
I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of people who are good. Honestly, most of these guys are staying on the same team. It's hard to
surprisingly
get
Phil Matlock's team, because they kept being able to drive off the track.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know.
That might be an exception, I'm guessing.
Yeah,
it's not hard. You know who you like, and you know what's possible. But there's guy. You watch those races. You know who's out there, who's hitting, and whose cars are good, and who's a real solid driver. I mean, there's a good handful of real quality drivers out there. I mean, there's a lot of, you get the blob, kind of like the NFL is now, where all the teams are stuck in the blob, and you got a few teams that are better. But I mean, it's kind of like how it is with drivers. There's a lot of blob drivers, which is where we'll meet my brother at right now. We'd like to make a name and get out of that blob, but there's a few guys who really stand out. But you know, what team's gonna let a guy like that go?
That is true. All right, Michael Noble, thank you very much for your time. We're bringing in Mel Noble Jr. Our next guest, also from Stranglehold, also team manager, Mel Noble Jr. Now, Steve, you know that my love affair for this man and his craziness is unparalleled. Like, this true story. After the league changed the rules that you had to keep your helmet on during a race because of Mel's helmetless head-on, Mel actually hit himself in the head with a frying pan just to make it a little bit interesting for himself. True story.
True story.
Yes. Mel, how you doing?
I'm doing good.
Good to hear. Now, the other thing that people might be surprised to learn about you is that you are legally blind. How blind are you?
At a standpoint for the doctors, what they say is I'm not able to see far distance or be able to drive on the road.
Like, okay, so I'm sitting, what am I, 5-6 feet away from you? How much of me can you see?
I can see you totally.
The Brad Pitt-like good looks, the color. Hey, it could be true.
Full head of hair.
That bald head's pretty shiny, so I can tell that.
Okay. I know. Somebody on Bad Company was, and they were suggesting this in joke that before you race, that what they do is hang a blue blanket over the side of the track. Now, would this throw you off at all, or
no?
Okay. And the other thing, and this is something like Steve touched on it with your brother Michael, where he said, you know, do you think your inexperience will help or hurt you? Is, you know, Steve's told me 1,000 times that if you don't know what you're getting into with the racing, you might go more balls out, you might be crazier, you might not think twice about, you know, crashing into a car with, say, you know, not wearing a helmet or something like that. But I was thinking about how this reflected to your status as legally blind, and I thought, you know, if you don't really know that much of what's coming or you don't have great peripheral vision, that seems like it also might help free up again. Do you find that at all the case?
No. With everything that's going on at the track at once, I'm able to tell different ideas of what's happening out there with me. Color-wise and sight with all of it, it works really well. Actually, the only team I've ever really had trouble seeing out there was Quicksilver in 2010. They were hard to tell differences of going through the race and where they're at.
Just because the color silver? Or?
It was just because it was... With silver, it's a lighter color. You know, it's a different to deal with that. It was hard for me to see the distance, like black, yellow, green, all the rest of the colors. I could see them from a far distance, really. But the silver, it was hard to see when you were racing with the sun out there and everything like that. It was hard to tell.
Well, I did hear that Reckoning is changing their colors to silver and black this year.
Yeah, so. They actually fear the championship of Stranglehold. They know.
So my question is, the track is roughly, what, quarter mile, let's say? If you're at one end and another team's lap runner is at the other, can you tell, you know, number-wise, like, can you see the board? I mean, this is stuff that, like, as a team manager or even, like, a team owner would say, you know, tell me now, can you see the board? So, I mean, if it's late in the race, you need to know, hey, who's running laps? You look up at that board, can you see number, you know, whatever?
No, I cannot see the board at all. The number-wise, it's too far away for me to see at that point. Really, my kind of deal is who's ever running at the time, I kind of check on the track of who's moving and who's coming down that front stretch, because really the runner has to come down that front stretch. So that guy coming down the front stretch or the back stretch wants that lap. I got to stop them.
Hmm. Okay, that makes sense.
It's almost simplifying it in a way. It's like, you know, you don't have to worry about hitting the wrong guy. You're just going for the guy that's moving up the back stretch.
So, I mean, beginning of the races, you might give you a little bit more trouble. I mean, at the beginning, it's, hey, there's a guy that's moving. I'm just going to pile into him and hope that was a lap runner.
Not really, because usually you kind of get an idea of the guy who's lining up first and second. One of them two got to make the laps.
Okay.
So your kind of deal is go through turn two and try to make the biggest mess. See who comes out of it. That guy who comes out of it going down the backstretch is the guy you got to go for. Over the last couple years, I've seen my dad, my uncle, and my family do it, so I kind of got an idea of what has to happen on the track and what's got to go down.
Yeah. That is it. Okay. So, yeah, because it was like when Michael was talking, I was surprised because, you know, it sounds funny to say, oh, the blind guy's watching so much tape. But it's like, wow, that's okay. But it strikes me odd. But while you are legally blind, you can't actually drive on like a street car, correct?
Correct.
It just sounds funny that we shouldn't even really be talking about you as the blind guy, because it really doesn't hamper your performance that much on the track.
I think, yeah, a lot of people are under the impression that you can't see a foot in front of your face. I think that's what a lot of people, you know, don't understand, you know. So, I mean, to me, there's some drawbacks to it, but obviously you've adapted to it. It's not as a disadvantage as a lot of people may think it is.
When I was younger, the doctors told me that I should be running into walls with my vision. They said I shouldn't be able to tie my shoes. I shouldn't be able to do nothing.
Now he just runs into walls with his car.
Yeah. No, because ever since then, everyone's always doubted me, what I could do, what I couldn't do. And through all this, every time I get on the track, it's just telling me I got to prove someone wrong. I want to prove myself wrong in the end to show, hey, I can do this. I can hang with the big dogs and do what they do.
Yeah, that's you hear about that chip that Michael Jordan has and all that. And it's like, it's good that you have a motivating factor like that going for you. I'm telling you, this is the kind of thing, like, when you first hear about it, it's like, why has Disney not made this movie? I mean, think about it. It's like, forget the fact that he's crazy. He's not just legally blind. He's also legally insane. Forget that part. Think about it this way. You have not just a Demolition Derby driver. It's like, ooh, I got it. Let's make him blind. It's like, wait, what? No, people. Oh, that exists? It's like, if I were you, I would try to land an agent to sell my life rights. Legally blind Demolition Derby driver.
Yeah, I mean, to me, no pun intended, but I take my hat off to you, because if I was in a car and my helmet come off,
oh,
I would probably be done. I do believe yours fell out of the car.
Yeah, let's set the scene here. Let's set the scene here. This is what, first night this year?
Yeah, first night against Green.
You're going against Mean Green, and your helmet, you take a hit and your helmet comes off, right?
Yeah.
And it doesn't just come off, it comes off. It's out of the car on the track, right?
Yeah.
Steve, did you see it when it was on the track? Just fly out the window?
No, I think you had a sunroof, right? And it popped out.
When I looked at the pic of it, it came out of my side by my driver's side. Came right out the side, right next to me, out the driver's door.
Mm-hmm.
And it was kind of a point that the race was going through, and I didn't strap it correctly like I used to. So, and then I lost it. I looked for it around the track, didn't see it, and I saw that Ryan Decker was still moving, and I knew we still had a race going on, and my car was still going.
I'm going to stop you right there. So just what this means is, in the middle of the race, you have a legally blind driver behind the wheel of a Demolition Derby car. Now he's not wearing a helmet, and he is looking around the track to find out who else he can crash into.
That's insanity.
And
not only does he go out and hit someone, he hits Ryan the Wrecker Decker.
Ryan the Wrecker Decker.
I mean, do you think that gets in the heads of other drivers? Like, you know, this kid's nuts. You know, I mean, no helmet and didn't even phase him. Let's go hit someone else.
Yeah. Woo! Sorry. All right, continue.
That's a pun.
No, it's I ain't looking to get into people's heads. I ain't looking to make them say, oh, God, I got to watch this guy. I want to have a normal race against people. I don't want them to be wondering every second where I'm at. That ain't going to bother me, because you know what? I got other teammates out there they got to worry about, not just me.
Steve, have you ever hit your head on anything, like with the helmet on when you're racing?
Oh, yeah. Plenty of times.
Does it still hurt then?
No, I mean, I've had it happen twice where, you know, you got one hand down on your shift lever getting ready to throw a gear, you know, reverse as a guy's coming, and you got one hand on the wheel, and just from the shot, you know, you still hold the wheel, but you come out and hit your head on the wheel. You don't physically hurt, but I have been knocked out from that. I mean,
that's with the helmet.
With the helmet on, yeah. I couldn't imagine smacking my face off the wheel, you know.
All right, now let me ask you this, Mel. Have you learned anything from this? Like, forget the fact that the league literally had to change their rules to accommodate your level of crazy. If your helmet ever comes off again, are you still thinking, where's that next car coming? Or are you like, listen, you've got to stop racing. You've got to stop doing this to yourself.
If the rules weren't where they are now, if you get DQ'd for losing a helmet and it came off again, I would go do the same thing again.
Oh, God. Ironically, he needs to be kicked in the head to get this out of his head. But I'll just say this as a tangent. I think that disqualification, the rule got changed so that if a driver loses his helmet, he is officially disqualified from the race. And I think that's sort of a step in the right direction maybe, but I don't think it actually captures any spirit of anything, because if a driver has lost his helmet, he's probably already disqualified. Like, I mean, there are very few situations where, like, it's the same thing with the getting out of the car rule, which is if a driver leaves the car during a race, he's automatically disqualified. But my point is, why is that driver leaving the car anyway if he's not already effectively out? It seems like...
Yeah. I mean, I guess you're not going to get out of your car, run around your car, and then hop back in it. You know?
No.
I mean, if you're getting out of your car, obviously it's because
you're hurt or
it's on fire.
Wrong.
Yeah, something like that. But no, I mean, I think there's very few guys that will lose a helmet and either... I mean, actually, Greg Message...
He lost it twice in one race.
And each time he drove off the track. I know one time he came back on, he should have been disqualified anyway. But,
yeah,
you know,
this was in 2010, though.
I don't know. I don't know if you want to say he had enough sense to drive off and find his helmet. But, I mean, if you're crazy, you're crazy. You're new crazy stuff. That's why you're crazy. And I put you in that grouping as nuts. Because why?
Best possible way.
Yeah, you know, I guess it's a compliment. You know, I mean, I do some crazy stuff, but if my helmet come off, I think I would disqualify, you know, disqualify yes. myself right at that time.
Yes. Well,
especially
first,
if the helmet, I can't find it in the car.
Well, when I go out on the track, my belief in me is that I'm going out there to show my team and show everybody in the stands that we got a team that can perform at the best. And I'm going out there that every race, every round is the championship round. I can't quit. I can't give up. I'm injured. It doesn't matter. If that car is still running, I got a job to do, and I don't want to lose that race because that championship's on the line.
By the way, that speech, that's going to be like the climactic speech in my demo driver movie that I'm pitching to Disney.
Yeah. It's just the thing. If you got that going for your head that every round's a championship round, you don't want to lose. You want to win that championship, and you want to have that in your hands at the end of the night. Yeah. And if that means I got to go through three rounds, injured or not injured, just to get it, I'm going to do it.
That's dedication is what that is.
I'm trying to figure out what other injuries we can give this guy in the Disney movie, like break a leg, he's still racing. There's nothing.
I've had injuries where I popped a rib out of place, pushed bone back in my hand and stuff like that.
Wait, on the track while you've been racing?
Yes, against Orange Crush last year, I took a head-on and my seatbelt wouldn't go back, and I went up and hit the steering wheel and I popped a rib out of place.
I have a new favorite driver. I got to tell you, Steve, I have a new favorite driver. Guys who are popping bones back into, well, ribs are cartilage. Guys who are popping cartilage back into place while they're racing to keep racing, that's my kind of
well,
driver.
Mike, how old are you?
I'm going to be 21 next Thursday.
Yes.
Yes,
the young
the youth.
Years. Yes.
Youth.
That's where a lot of the crazy comes from.
Yes, I think if I had that same hit in a car and my seatbelt, I think it would, like, saw me in half, but oh, well. All right, Mel Noble Jr., thank you very much for joining us today.
Stranglehold!
We appreciate your brand of crazy and, oh, more than you can ever appreciate, and wish you guys nothing but the best of luck next year.
Thank you. Be watching for Stranglehold in 2012 because we will be getting a championship.
All right, you heard it
here
first.
You heard it, the guarantee.
All right, it is time for your five questions. Now, you guys, Michael, Mel, you guys can team up together. These are posed to the two of you to answer together, so you are going to be judged collectively. All right, question number one. Name one thing crazier than Junior's helmetless head-on.
Wow, what do you got?
I don't got nothing right now. That's pretty crazy.
This is a really weak effort. Bluer is blowing the pants off you guys.
I tell you something crazy I've seen. I've seen Wayne drive Nick Jelandi through the back wall of his enclosed car trailer because the brakes went out pulling into a trailer.
Actually, Steve? I have seen that too.
That was pretty crazy.
Will you give that crazier than a helmet's head on?
No, I won't. I'm sorry. That's weak.
That is incorrect. All right. Number two. You had a teammate this last year, Bill McMahon.
The Hammer.
He won one of the most, the biggest upset of the year against Orange Crush. Granted, he didn't know about it until he was being interviewed, but he won. I want you to spell with the correct capitalization his last name, your teammate.
Capital M, C. There's an H in there somewhere.
Yeah, so far, okay.
Capital M, lowercase C, capital H, A, lowercase A, obviously, M-A-N?
No, that is incorrect. Wow, 0 for 2. It is capital M, small c, small m, A-H-E-N.
Whatever.
Yeah, that's right.
All right.
True or false, I spent 15 minutes looking for words that ended in a bull last night so that I could make jokes about the name Noble.
I hope it's false.
That is indeed true. Yeah, you should have gone with it. Wow, 0 for 3. All right, Michael, you're a fan of football, correct?
Correct.
All right, it's 4th and 2. You're on the opponent's 40. What do you do?
Punt.
What? No. You never punt.
That is correct. We will accept that. Mel is just proving his craziness.
You never played Madden with him. He doesn't punt.
He
doesn't believe in punting.
All right, last question for you. I am thinking of a word that is derived from a Latin word. It is used to describe those who are well-known or of the highest social order. What word am I thinking of?
Would it be nobles?
It would indeed be nobles.
Oh,
all right, thanks, guys. 2 of 5. Congratulations. Thanks again.
Thanks a lot.
No problem.
Thus ends this episode of Behind the Destruction. Please check back next week on December 13th for our next podcast with guest Ryan Decker.
For Chris Neumer and Steve Gierske Jr., go Gierske or go home. I'm John Sunzimer. We hope you enjoyed our podcast and thank you for listening. For past episodes of Behind the Destruction and the latest Demolition Derby columns and interviews, please visit BehindTheDestruction.com. You can follow us on our Facebook page or follow Chris Neumer on Twitter at CNeumer. C-N-E-U-M-E-R.